Hey, Betties. Welcome to the Better Podcast. It's your host, Dr. Stephanie. It is geeky magic time where I step away from the interviews and just talk to you. It's just going to be me and you today. And these episodes, I'm going to bring you personal insights, frequently asked questions, topic du jour in a more condensed, quick, and actionable way. I go hard on the geek, wrap it up with sprinkles and magic for you to do and be better. Okay, Betties, we are going to talk about estrogen dominance, and how we can look at appropriate estrogen metabolism as a way for balancing our hormones.
One of my goals this year is to make it my best year ever with my skin. And one of the ways that I'm doing that is with the Bond Charge Red Light Neck and Chest Mask. Wrinkles, acne, scarring, skin roughness, loss of collagen and elastin happen in the face and in the neck and the décolletage area on our chest, where the skin is very thin and susceptible to skin damage. I think at this point, we're all pretty good about putting sunscreen on our face, but so many of us miss the neck and the chest area too. I use the Bond Charge Neck and Chest Mask daily for about 10 minutes in the morning while I'm checking emails. Their red and near-infrared light waves together penetrate up to 5 to 10 centimeters below the skin surface. The red light reaches the skin's top layers, and the NIR light targets the deeper tissues without UV exposure, and that's going to help reduce the fine lines, wrinkles, and to help ramp up collagen and elastin production. So I want you to head over and have your best skin with me this year. Go to bondcharge.com/better. That's BETTER. And use the discount code BETTER at checkout. And that's going to give you 15% off your entire cart. Transform your health and fitness with the Carol Bike, the smartest, most effective exercise backed by science. You can experience unparalleled results in just a minimum of 15 minutes per week, thanks to AI personalized workouts tailored to your age and your fitness level. You will increase fat loss, train up your strength and your speed, and have better energy, something that every woman, including myself, absolutely covets. I always say that women are the original biohackers. If there's a way for us to feel better and look better, we are all over it. Carol Bike, in my opinion, is one of the best pieces of cardio equipment that you can invest in. Studies prove that Carol helps you achieve a 12% increase in cardio fitness, lowers the risk of type 2 diabetes by 62%, and reduces blood pressure by 5% in as little as 8 weeks. Begin your transformation with the Carol Bike today and enjoy $100 off using the promo code BETTER for our beautiful Better Podcast listeners. That's BETTER. All you have to do is visit carolbike.com.
So this is going to be just a squeak more of a technical episode, but I know that you can handle it. You will find the show notes. I'm going to put some diagrams and some fun things in the show notes for you. But if you're having a hard time following along, make sure that you listen to this a couple times and also use the show notes as your friend. So I want to talk a little bit, let's start off with some of the clues, like before we start testing. Now, testing is, we can do many ways of testing. I'm a fan, when we're looking at estrogen metabolism, to look at urine testing, something called the Dutch test, which I will put a link to in the show notes. And actually, it's something that you don't need to go to in most parts of the States and in Canada. You don't need to go to a functional medicine practitioner to order the Dutch test. You can actually order it directly from the company. It's just the, you'll get like 400 pages back. So the interpretation of the test, you may need a doctor for. But the Dutch test is really sort of the gold standard, in my opinion, for looking at estrogen. Because when we look at other ways that we can test estrogen, we can look at blood, we can look at salivary markers, but those are sort of like the difference there versus a urine test is when we look at blood and salivary collections of estrogen, you're just getting like one collection. It's almost like a snapshot in time versus if you're getting a urine test and you're looking at estrogen over the course of a day, you're going to be able to tease out patterns that are there, where things are and how the estrogen is being metabolized. So it's kind of like akin to, you know, if you look at blood testing, it's sort of like a picture versus urine testing is almost like a video on your phone, right? It gives you a lot more context, a lot more color, a lot more information. So really love the Dutch test. I'll put that into our show notes. But even before we get to testing, when we think about estrogen, it's phenotypically the female hormone that we ascribe to femininity. You know, it gives us our cheekbones get plumped up, our lips get plumped up, helps our skin look good. Depending on how your estrogen is metabolized, it is the size often of your breasts. It's also really important for bone. Estrogen is trophic. It is a growth factor. Now, just like Goldilocks, you know, too little is not good and too much is not good. You need estrogen that's just right. So thinking about some of these symptoms, if you're a woman in your reproductive years and you may think that you're kind of hormonal or that your estrogen might be out of whack, you might see things like feeling PMS-y in the week or two leading up to your period. So that might mean that you are more moody, that you will experience more sleep disturbances because estrogen impacts the way that we sleep. Of course, progesterone is also in there as well, which I'm going to loop in a moment. You may notice that leading up to your, like in those last 2 weeks, that luteal phase of your cycle, that putting on your rings is a little difficult, right? Like it's a little tighter. Maybe you're a little bit more bloated, a little bit more puffy, that you are constipated, that you are not necessarily, you're retaining more water. And then when you get your period, the bleed itself may be heavy. So you may find in those first day or two or even 3 days, it's very, very heavy bleeding. And the bleed itself, when you look at the quality of the blood, lots of clots in the bleed. And just generally, even if we just don't think about what your menstruation looks like, you may find that you carry a bit more weight in the lower part of your trunk. So maybe in the thighs and in the bum area. Your breasts might get very tender. So you might experience tender breasts leading up to your period. You may have fibrocystic breasts. You may have fibroids, endometriosis, or have a propensity towards endo. And then other things is like vaginal dryness, right? Like kind of thinner and drier. Libido may not be kind of where it is, where it should be, intercourse, that kind of thing. So lots of clues for your estrogen being out of whack. And of course, this is sort of a laundry list of things. It doesn't mean that all of these things are only estrogen. And this is something that I really like to emphasize when we're talking about something like estrogen or like a hormone. You can't just have estrogen out of whack and not have other things out of whack. So like I said, I'm going to pull in progesterone in a moment. And progesterone is really, we see a lot of sleep disturbances, a lot of PMS type symptoms with low progesterone relative to estrogen. So it's not just that your estrogen is out of whack and all you got to do is focus on the estrogen. Like your hormones are going to be telling you that something is out of balance and it's usually going to be a couple of things. So with that said, I wanted to walk you through what normal metabolism of estrogen looks like. And the golden rule of estrogen is use her and then lose her. So we want to use estrogen for its trophic factors. And then we don't want her to hang around too much, right? Because then she's going to make everything too big, too much, like it's too much bleeding, too many clots. Breasts are big and tender. So we want to use her and lose her. So there's three different, when we are metabolizing estrogen, it's actually estrogens, right? And here's my word nerd coming out. It's not just one, but it's actually three hormones that we're talking about, we're referring to with estrogen metabolism. The two main ones are going to be E1 or estrone and E2 estradiol. So estradiol is actually it's often used as a proxy for total estrogen because we actually want around 70% of our estrogen converting in... we want most of our estrogen converting to estradiol. Estrone, we don't really more than 10% of E1 or estrone, and I'll talk about why that is in a moment. And then estriol or E3, we want that to be around 20% of our estrogen breakdown. So like I was saying, it's not just one. So estrogens there's sort of three different types. And when we are talking about the first phase of estrogen metabolism, there are three phases. One is called hydroxylation. The second is conjugation. The third is elimination. So Hydroxylation is simply adding an OH group. So it's simply adding a hydroxy compound to the estrogen. The estrogen is turning into almost a metabolite, right? So first, for anybody who who's done a genetic report, like a 23andMe or some other genetic profiling, there are going to be certain SNPs, so certain genes that are going to be involved in these estrogen metabolites. So when we're thinking about estradiol, we're thinking about 2OH that is going to be mediated by the CYP1A1 gene. For estrone, the 4OH metabolite, it's CYP1B1. And then estriol, or the 16OH metabolite, we are looking at CYP3A4. Now, I will just say that we haven't talked a lot of genetics on the pod before. I think that it would be worthwhile if I have a geneticist on the pod to go into greater detail here. But what I will say is, having something that's super fast is not always the best thing. And when we have a conversation on androgens, we will talk about how sometimes having a really quick enzyme can actually throw testosterone into a super testosterone called dihydrotestosterone, or DHT. So sometimes having a fast, like the super fast version of a gene, is not necessarily always ideal. Sometimes you want it to be a little bit slower. So I'll sort of say that in kind, because I think that the assumption often when we're thinking about genes is that we just want the best one. And sometimes we want something that's fast. Sometimes we want something that's slow. And sometimes we just want to look at the 30,000 foot picture and see how everything is working in kind. So just wanted to mention that. And for some women, okay, so when we're talking about estrone and the metabolite 4OH, the CYP1B1, which is the SNP there, it exhibits something called higher catalytic efficiency in the breast tissue, okay? So basically, this is why often we will see women who have, you know, more of their estrogen going down that 4OH pathway. We might see those fibrocystic breasts or the tender breasts around their period, or we might see things like endometriosis. And, you know, full disclosure, my body tends to want to produce more 4OH metabolites than it should. And a lot of this hydroxylation is genetic. Like a lot of the, you know, the pathways that you prefer are going to have more of, it's going to be dictated by your genes. And specifically with this 4OH pathway, this is not considered protective. And one of the big problems with this pathway is that we can begin to produce something called quinones, which are, they can induce like DNA damage, like these single-stranded breaks, and oxidative damage to the DNA. So this is basically, if you listen to my conversation with Dr. Sinclair, this is accelerated aging, right? We want to make sure that we can protect our DNA as much as we can. So this quinone, this 4OH pathway can start producing these quinones and this reactive oxygen species, this oxidative damage to the DNA. So we really want to understand which of these three pathways, the 2OH, which is considered protective, we want most of about 70% of our estrogen being going down this pathway. Estrone, that 4OH, we want 10% or less. And then the estriol, 20% or less. So that's hydroxylation. Conjugation, which is the second step in estrogen elimination. This is basically making these metabolites, the 2OH, the 4OH, the 16OH, making them more soluble, basically so that we can help with renal and biliary excretion, meaning that we can, like our kidneys, we can get rid of them. They're more water soluble and we can get rid of them easier. So conjugation is just a fancy word for making them more soluble so that we can get rid of them. And there's a couple of different ways that we make these metabolites more soluble. The three main ways are methylation, I always trip myself over this word, but gluconidation and glutathionization. So let's talk about methylation, because this has really gotten a lot of attention in the functional medicine community, particularly for one enzyme called MTHFR, which has been the subject of many memes because it almost sounds like motherfucker. So MTHFR, but this is not the only thing, right? This is not the only thing that we are concerned with when we're thinking about methylation. It's essentially like methylation in and of itself, when we just think about what it is, it's essentially a relay race, right? So I used to run relay when I was younger. I used to run track for Ontario, made it to the national team, etc. And what you do in a relay race is you have it's like the 400 meter or whatever. You have four people running that race, each at 100 meter. Each of them are running 100 meters. And you are basically passing a baton, right? You're passing a baton from runner one to runner two, runner two to three, and runner 3, 2, 4. And methylation is essentially that. Essentially, methylation is, instead of a baton, you're essentially punting forward a methyl group.
I am incredibly bullish on sauna as a therapy for recovery, heart health, and overall aging well. I personally decided on an infrared sauna from Sunlighten because of the range of far wavelengths and near infrared wavelengths that it offers. Saunas help with detoxification and rejuvenation to rid your body of toxins. It helps with heart health by improving circulation, reducing blood pressure, and helping keep the arteries supple. It helps with muscle recovery by easing the tension and soreness to recover faster. And of course, stress reduction. With the warmth and the relaxation of sitting in a sauna, it's crucial for hormonal balance and achieving a state of well-being necessary for a strong physique and a strong mind. If you visit sunlighten.com/better and use code better to get a discount, that is sunlighten, sunlighten.com/better, and use code better at checkout.
And when we think about methylation in the context of estrogen metabolism, we are looking at the gene COMT, or COMT for short, right? So this is like one of the major metabolizers of estrogens. And we want to have COMT here. We want to have a balance between COMT taking those two OH metabolites and forming something called 2-methoxyestrone. So even if you don't have your genetic information, you can sort of look at COMT and you can sort of look at those two ratios, right? Like 2OH, you can look at the ratio between 2OHE1 and 2-methoxyestrone, and that can indicate whether or not you may have an imbalance in estrogen activity. So if you're still listening, and I sound like I'm speaking Chinese to you, here's the takeaway. Okay. So even if you have poor methylation, so even if your ability to punt the methyl group forward in the very long methylation process, you can increase and help your methylation, particularly COMT, when we by supplementing with magnesium and something called SAMe. These are really two very important cofactors that will drive COMT activity. And I've often joked about COMT. I always think of COMT as like the entrepreneurial gene, because it's also involved in dopamine metabolism as well, right? So when we think about an entrepreneur, and I'm, you know, because of Giovanni, my partner Giovanni's work, I get to see a lot of them. And of course, I am an entrepreneur myself. You get to see how when people get to a win, like they get to this like goal, or they sign the big client, or they do something that would be measured as you know, successful in their business. Most entrepreneurs, in my experience, and I've seen this with some of the higher level female clients that I work with as well, like they get the big job, they land the big thing, and then they're just off to the next thing. Like they don't stop to celebrate it. Like, oh, great, yeah, got the dopamine hit, and next, right? So I often will find that people who have a very fast compt, they tend to be more susceptible to addictive behaviors. So an entrepreneur, you might argue, is addicted to work, right? They also are susceptible to other addictive behaviors like alcoholism and drug use, etc. And that's not to say that all entrepreneurs do that. There's just if you have a fast comp gene, it's generally the case that you are more susceptible because you're always looking for that dopamine hit. And if you're someone who has a slow comp gene, then you are someone who can stay focused for longer periods of time. So I often will find that my doctors, my practitioners, in order to learn the amount of stuff that we know, in order to understand all this complex science and all the pathways and all the things, you need to be able to have the dopamine is kind of hanging around the synapse a little longer so that you can actually focus. Now, me particularly, I have a heterozygous comp. So I'm sort of like a middle, like I'm right in the middle. So I'm not super fast. I'm not super slow. I'm right in the middle, which explains a lot of my behavior anyway. But think of the comp as like you're either a warrior or you're a worrier. So the warrior is the one who metabolizes dopamine super quick, never celebrate your wins, all the type A personalities, all the entrepreneurs that are listening. And then the worrier is the person who can mull over information for a long period of time. So it's like, think about the doctor who's like sitting for days on end for an exam, or someone who just like ruminates over something. It's usually because their comp gene is a little slow. And then there's other ways that we get rid of estrogen as well, the glutathionization that I mentioned, and the glucuronidation as well. So those two primarily happen in the hepatic tissue. That primarily happens in the liver. And then the third phase of estrogen metabolism is getting rid of it, right? So this is happening in the gut. And of course, it goes without saying that if you have poor digestion in any way, so if you have, constipation, anything from constipation to loose stools, or you feel distended or bloated or gassiness after a meal, and it may be that your gut, the integrity, the composition, the constitution of the bacterial makeup and the fungal makeup of the gut is compromised. So we want to be thinking about how we basically want to poop out our estrogen, right? So if you don't have a robust digestive system where things are always kind of getting slowed up, or you don't have the proper gut motility, then, or some sort of gut dysbiosis, like SIBO or SIFO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth or small intestinal fungal overgrowth, this is also going to affect estrogen, because the longer this, and this is especially true for people who do not go to the bathroom every day. And this is part of the reason why, I was talking to Dr. Afrooz Demri on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and she was like, the one thing that I have to make sure with my patients is, one, they can't have tender breasts. And the other thing that they can't have, they have to poop once a day. Because if you don't poop once a day, then it gives your estrogen a chance to be reabsorbed from the intestine, and then it can reactivate some of the processes that we were talking about, leading to some of those PMS symptoms. So pooping once a day, super duper important. That can be facilitated with an increased water intake, of course, increasing your fiber, insoluble fiber in particular. That can be done through green leafy vegetables. And this is one of the things that I really like to talk a lot about with when it comes to estrogen, particularly is cruciferous vegetables. So the brassica family is such a great family of vegetables. They have compounds in them like sulforaphanes and isothiocyanates and indoles that help with improving the estrogen metabolism all the way through. And there's a lot of other benefits, right? When you are consuming cruciferous vegetables, I mean, there's like reduced mortality from heart disease, which is still the number one killer in women. It's not cancer. It's CVD, cardiovascular disease. It improves our lipid profiles. It improves our breast cancer risk. It improves inflammatory, an inflammatory pathway called the NF-kappa-B pathway, reduces the DNA damage that we were talking about before. So if you tend to move towards that 4-OH pathway, like I do, consumption of cruciferous vegetables are super duper important. And, Yeah, I mean, even if those things don't even speak to you, like, you look better, right? So reducing DNA damage is going to obviously afford you better skin, better hair, better nails. We've seen studies where it's reduced balding in mice and stimulated hair growth. And it also helps to induce the breakdown of fat. So super duper important, these cruciferous vegetables, and that's one of the big solutions. So somebody who has a deranged estrogen metabolism, either at phase one, that hydroxylation, phase two, which is the conjugation piece, and phase three, one of the first things that I will often recommend is to make sure that they are consuming a lot more cruciferous vegetables than they would like. And it's typically that they are not consuming high amounts of fiber. Other things that I would recommend for someone to improve or to make that shift from the 4-OH to the 2-OH pathway would be to consume sirtuin activating compounds. So go back and listen to Dr. Dave Sinclair and I talk about sirtuins. These are silent information regulators, but compounds like resveratrol, we find those in grapes, EGCG, like we find in green tea, all these polyphenols that we see in berries. These are all anti-inflammatory and have been shown to activate sirtuins, which again is going to help shift that pathway, the 4-OH to the 2-OH pathway. And if I can give you a little laundry list of things to avoid, obviously vegetable oils, like throw that shit in the garbage, like no more canola, no more sunflower oil. It's full of inflammatory omega-6 fatty acids. They tend to be much more unstable, much more susceptible to oxidation. And even when you kind of look at those canola oil jugs in the grocery store, they're all in plastic, right? So you're never getting it in a very dark glass jar that will help to keep the oil from spoiling and turning rancid. Avoiding canned foods, right? Because you get all the chemicals that are going to leach into the food. Margarine, obviously, is garbage. So kind of avoiding these processed foods and these trans fats, which are going to really help as well to lower your overall inflammatory load. So that's kind of like a, 101 estrogen metabolism, 101. And I will be doing a series of this. So we're going to talk about androgens and testosterones very soon. We're going to talk about cholesterol and cortisol as well to help you kind of piece how all of these things are talking to each other. And I mentioned that we were going to talk about progesterone here today. And I'll mention that low progesterone is usually it's usually accompanying too much estrogen. So when we say low progesterone, it could be that the absolute number of progesterone that you're producing is low. And we know that as you pass the age of about 35, that we start to see an attenuation of progesterone production in general. But low progesterone is typically in relation, and like in the relative amount to estrogen. So in your luteal phase, and I've talked about this in Menstruation 101 in another Geeky Magic, we see a prolonged and sustained elevation of estrogen in luteal phase. And then there is a peak of progesterone she reaches her peak at the end of week 3, beginning of week 4. So if your estrogen is higher relative to your progesterone, that is when we call it estrogen dominance, right? And low progesterone is all the PMS-y stuff. So we've talked about some of those things as it pertains to estrogen dominance, but like the headaches and the migraines, and maybe you'll see spotting in your underwear leading up to your period. So you kind of think that your period's starting, but you know it's a little too early for it. Or your cycle is shorter. Libido can also drop as well. So like low sex drive. Progesterone is also really important for helping us calm down and have really great sleep. So progesterone, if you're feeling like really anxious in those last 2 weeks, that may also be an indication, or sleep disruptions, that may also be a indication that your progesterone is a little low. So I hope that this has been useful for you. We will continue this series and talk about androgens and the metabolism of androgens in next week's Geeky Magic. But the takeaways here is understanding how estrogen is actually processed in your body and some of the easy hacks that you can do right now, like eating more cruciferous vegetables. So I'd love to hear, whether it's on Instagram, you can find me at Dr. Stephanie Estima on Instagram. It can be in a review on the podcast, how you have increased your cruciferous vegetables and what you are making, because I am always on the lookout for really great recipes. So with that in mind, I hope that you have a wonderful day, and we will see you next week on Geeky Magic Thursdays. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. For those of you who want to continue on this week's Geeky Magic Carpet Ride with me, visit bettershow.co/show notes. You'll find research, links, summary notes, musings that I prepared in preparation for the podcast, and I often throw in some of my best practices, bonuses, and links. All the juicy bits are in there for you. And now for the obligatory legal and medical disclaimer. This podcast is for general information only, and the advice, recommendations we discuss do not replace medicine, chiropractic, or any other primary healthcare provider's advice, treatment, or care. In the consumption of this podcast, there is no doctor-patient relationship formed, and the use and implementation of the information discussed are at the sole discretion of the listener. The information and opinions shared on this podcast are not intended to be a substitute for primary care, diagnosis, or treatment. This episode is brought to you by yours truly, Dr. Stephanie Estima, and Leverage. Leverage handles all production, creates the images that you see on my social media, and takes out all my awkward pauses. They are my secret magic bullet. You can visit them at getleverage.com/better.